Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks with Wall Street Reporter. And today I am speaking with Robert Rain. He's the CEO of LMS Capital, which trades on the London Exchange. Stock symbol is LMS. Robert, good morning and thank you for joining us.
Good morning and thank you.
Let's start off with maybe if you can give us an overview of LMS Capital's investment strategy and some of the things that differentiate you from other players in the space.
Okay, the first thing is we are a public company and we're a debt-free company. And the main attribute in today's market is we manage our own capital. We don't raise funds from third parties. We manage our own capital, so we're not time-constrained in what we do. We're an international investment company. At the moment, about half in the U.S. and half in the U.K., and our spectrum goes from early stage to late stage buyouts, and we do that through three or four different areas: energy, applied technology, real estate, and media and leisure. So those are the main focuses of the business.
Okay. And I noticed, I just took a quick look through some of your portfolio companies. You also have some, it looked like they were like, were they venture capital type investments or early stage?
Absolutely, yes. A sizable proportion of our portfolio is unquoted. As I say, we do some early stage unquoted investments, some later stage buyouts. But we also have quoted investments and companies that have gone from being private to public companies. So yes, we cover the full spectrum.
Okay, so essentially, you're a relatively opportunistic investor.
Well, we sort of it's necessary to know where we came from. We came out of a public company in the United Kingdom called London Merchant Securities, which was a real estate and investment company. LMS Capital became independently quoted in 2006, but its business has gone back over 30 years. So although we've only recently been quoted as a separate public company, the actual business model has evolved over 30 years.
Okay. And can you walk us through, like, your investment criteria and maybe share with us some recent deals which, would illustrate that?
First of all, we need to ensure that we protect our downside in any investment. So we spread our risk both in terms of bringing in partners and in the number of investments we have. We look now to produce net IRRs over a 10-year period of about 20%. I say 10 years because most businesses we find take about 10 years to really grow and become mature. We look for businesses that do not require huge additional capital, but where we can acquire other businesses to make them bigger. Our businesses are very hands-on managed by our team, and we always have directors on the board or shadow directorships.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. How proactive are you in in sort of managing your portfolio and creating value?
Well, we're very proactive in managing the portfolio, but we essentially back managers to manage their businesses. If they don't do that right, then it's our obligation to change those managers. Or if we see technology or businesses that can be added to the existing portfolio, then it's our job to make sure that that happens. But essentially, we back people who do the best thing that they know, which is managing their businesses.
Mm-hmm. And right now, let's go back to what's the total size of your portfolio, and what's sort of the breakdown of by sectors? How what typical size of the investment?
Right, the portfolio is about £240 million. And the spread between different sectors is as follows. You'll find that about 23% of it is in the energy business, 30% of it is in applied technology, mostly software businesses and software as a service business. We have about 11% in healthcare and medical products, 25% in media and leisure, and 8% in real estate. So we're pretty well diversified. These are long-term sectors, and having, as I explained, we expect most of our investments to last 7 to 10 years.
Okay. What's the size of a typical investment?
As small as £1 million and as big as £30 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I noticed also you do have investments in some other, they look like whether private equity or hedge funds.
Yes, quite a lot of our business is unquoted or private equity. So we have in funds and unquoted £160 million of investment. The balance is in quoted or in cash.
Okay. Now, how are you adapting to today's credit market, or has that had any impact? Has that created a lot of opportunities that you're finding?
I think it has opportunities, it has risks, and most importantly, if our investee companies are finding it difficult to finance themselves, we need to ensure that we can finance them where the banks can't. So we've been very tough on incurring debt, either in the holding company or in the investee companies, and we think it'll be some time before the banking systems generally provide the working capital that companies need. So we're conservative at this point. We have very little direct or indirect debt, and we're seeing interesting opportunities thrown up by the banks essentially not being able to finance good companies.
Mm-hmm. Now, Robert, does in your opinion, does the investment community like fully understand the story, and if not, what is it that they're missing you'd like to articulate about the LMS?
Right. I think they probably don't understand the story, and understandably, because the company has only become an independent public company less than 3 years ago. The first thing to understand it, the business is 30 years old. It's been in the oil business, the leisure business. In America, we were part owners of Six Flags. In the UK, we were founder shareholders of BSkyB. In the technology area, we financed companies like American Cellular, Interwoven, Commerce One, Intertrust, with some well-known names, both sides of the Atlantic. But that's over a 30-year period. So we need to get out there and meet investors and explain to them what we do. We do what private stockbrokers often do for people. We have a portfolio which is risk-diversified and designed for long-term capital growth.
Okay. And can you share with us your background and some of the key players on your team?
Sure. My background is I was chief executive of London Merchant Securities, which spun off LMS Capital into a separate public company. That company was primarily a real estate development company and developed buildings like the General Motors building in New York and some significant buildings here in the UK. When it spun off, I became chief executive of the spin-off company, LMS Capital. Alongside me and the team, on the non-executive side, we have a man called Bernard de Rock Danner, who is chairman and chief executive of Weatherford, the oilfield service company, which we financed from its startup some 22 years ago. We have Peter Hooft, who joined LMS Capital in November 2006, and he was previously with J.P. Morgan Partners, Botts & Company, and Bain. Edward Snow, who's a technology man, came out of Amadeus, and he joined us in 2007. We also have Jamie Rhodes, who specializes in the leisure and media side, a man called Jamie Spiro, who joined us fairly recently from Singer and Friedlander Investment Bank, Gene Weber, who works in our U.S. office, which is based in San Francisco, and Gene came out of Weiss, Peck & Greer, and McKinsey. He has, working with him, Cameron Steele, who is working on companies like CopperEye in our portfolio, and he was with RBC before joining us. Then in America, we also have Scott Potter, who is responsible for our investment in companies like Method, the cleaning products company, which has been a tremendous success. So back here in the head office, Martin Paxton, who came out of Allen & Overy, and after that, London Merchant Securities, is our managing director. And non-executives, we have Richard Christou, who is worldwide, other than Japan, Fujitsu, and Tony Sweet, who is our chief financial officer. I think I've covered just about everybody.
I think everybody. Now, you mentioned actually one of your holdings, which I thought was quite interesting, this company called Method, which has really kind of come out of nowhere and it's become a huge success. Can you give us an illustration of, you know, how your involvement with Method came about and how that deal has worked out, and maybe also give a couple of other typical investments like that, or let's say success stories that where you've had a role.
Right. I should point out before we start the success stories, we also have failures.
Let's talk about those. That's a good way to balance.
We talk about those too. Method is a good story. It's run by a very good management team who are the founders, but alongside them we brought in very professional managers. We control about 13% of the company, along with the Simon family and a number of other direct investors. The company has virtually doubled every year in the last five years and will produce about $100 million of sales this year. It's well run. It sells to all the major retailers, including Target in the US, Sainsbury's in the UK. And it's a very typical company for our U.S. office, which is known as San Francisco Equity Partners. And they've done extremely well with it. Their follow-up investment, which is also interesting, is a company called... it's a cosmetic company. Which they took an interest in about a year ago. It's called Yes2 Inc. It produces cosmetics for 16 to 25-year-olds. Again, we have about 12% of the company. And that company has grown very, very dramatically in the last 2 years. So our San Francisco office specializes in three things. San Francisco Equity Partners look for consumer products where they get very intimately involved in the management and distribution. We have a fund of funds based out of San Francisco, which is run by Brian Bank, and that is across the board in all the areas we're interested in, including energy and applied technology. And then we have a post-IPO fund, which is run by Gene Weber, who is a particular expert in microcaps.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
pipe transactions.
Sorry?
Like a direct investment.
Yes, pipe transactions, and frankly, identifying ones, what we call fallen angels. Great technology, mm-hmm. Companies that are not used to operating in the public arena, and disappoint earnings and become significantly undervalued, and we tend to take fairly big stakes and long-term investments in those companies. Very close to private equity situation.
Sure. Yeah, and there's certainly a lot of those in today's market.
Absolutely.
You've been in business with this company for about 30 years, but what does the future look like for LMS Capital? Like where do you see this company in the next 5 years?
Well, we're particularly interesting at the moment because we sell at 48p per share, against a net asset value which is north of 80p a share. So we're significantly discounted. We have no debt. And we have a very interesting last few years where we've written down many of our technology investments and already absorbed startup losses. So I expect the next two or three years to have three ingredients. One is we will narrow the ordinary market discount. Two, the write-offs that we've been taking on the early stage technology investments will start getting written back. The bad companies tend to go bankrupt and the good ones survive. And most of the bankruptcies, I think, have occurred. And finally, I think we'll be one of the few companies with cash at the time when people need cash.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess that kind of touched on my last question, which, you know, in your opinion, like, what would be the key reasons for investors to consider buying, you know, LMS today?
Well, it is low risk. It's established, not as a public company. It's new as a public company. But the business goes back 30 years, so it's a well-established business with good deal flow, strong managers, and a very strong balance sheet. So all of those things, I think, are very compelling in a market which should slowly recover over the next 2 years.
Okay. Well, Robert, we look forward to following the LMS story in the months ahead.
Thanks, and thank you very much for your interesting questions.